Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey. Yes, I'm back at it again with my co-host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, it's Podcast Friday. You know, it's my favorite day of the week. What are you saying these days?
It is too. Very exciting. Always a pleasure to speak with some new guests. And I'm sure today will be no exception. And of course, the other big thing on the radar is, well, we're getting into the holiday season. So I do believe at the time of this recording, this will be our last recording of the year. And then it's looking forward to 2026.
I took a screenshot. You'll remember, Al, this year, I texted both of my business partners. I said, 2026 is going to be one of the best years ever. And I asked them to save it because I want to look back at the end of the year. And if I'm right, they probably owe me a dinner. If I'm wrong, well, just delete that from your records and make sure you delete it from your deleted file as well.
Pretend we didn't see it.
Exactly. Well, I'm so excited. One of the benefits, and it was kind of a surprise benefit of starting the podcast because it was a branding exercise in the beginning, didn't know where it was going to go, but we get to meet so many awesome, smart, cool people. Today is no exception, and we get introductions from cool, smart people. So our friend Margot Perlmutter gave us an introduction to who's joining us today, who is Naomi Teitelman, a co-founder of Future Forward, a consultancy and community that empowers HR leaders to make work better. An award-winning HR executive and thought leader, Naomi's career spans over two decades across consulting and corporate leadership, including her tenure as CHRO for American Express Canada. This is where she became known for her progressive people strategies and deep focus on both employee and customer experience. With roots at Deloitte Consulting and a global perspective shaped by her work with major financial institutions, Naomi helps HR professionals anticipate the future of work and drive meaningful cultural transformation. Her expertise spans diversity and inclusion, organizational design, women in leadership, and employee experience. And her mission through Future Forward is to help HR leaders lead with empathy, curiosity, and courage in an era of constant change. When she's not reimagining the world of work, Naomi enjoys exploring Toronto, staying active, and spending time with her husband and two children. Naomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be here. I can't promise to be awesome, cool, or smart, but let's see where it all goes.
I think you're all three. When I first met you, we had such a good conversation. I only wish we had hit record prior to that first meeting. I want to talk about, because to me, that's bragging rights, right? Like American Express, like that is such a global brand, right? You see someone pull that out, it's like, wow, American Express, right? You grew up with that. I remember my dad had one. Major, major brand. But can you talk a little bit about going from that world, you know, you leading HR for a global brand to opening up your own shop and really, from what I understand, a movement that's going to shape the future of HR. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. So I ended up at American Express actually because I encountered them as a client and saw how amazingly well they were dealing with people issues. So they were talking about HR in a way that really resonated with me, really made sense, was talking about kind of at the time org design and talent strategy and things that were really near and dear to my heart as a consultant, but I didn't see pervasive in organizations actually. Like we were talking about it and we were coaching our clients to be more of that, but wasn't really working with a lot of progressive companies on that front, especially those that embrace HR and actually bring HR to the table to solve these problems. So it was kind of serendipitous that it kind of piqued my interest. And American Express is a wonderful organization and specifically very, very good at HR. Very, very good about doing what I believe HR is built to do, which is supercharging human performance. At the end of the day, HR's job is to make work better, working with a whole bunch of different levers in order to do that. So my foray into entrepreneurship, I always believe that I want to drive impact in this space, and it doesn't really matter what my employment arrangement is with that company, right? Like I can go into organizations and coach and advise companies and do projects with companies that have outcomes that are very meaningful and drive all the impacts that they want to achieve without necessarily being a full-time employee. So I kind of went at it 10 years ago. I actually was still at American Express when we started Future Forward, though. Future Forward was started as an annual conference really designed to bring HR leaders together to pursue our mission of evolving and driving the future of work in organizations. And so now, you know, almost 10 years later, we have our podcast, we have our newsletter, and we have a community for CHROs and VP and above talent and HR business partner leaders who really are committed to making work better in their organizations. So it wasn't a very much of a leap. It was more of a different approach to solving kind of the same issue or going after the same purpose and mission that I've always believed I've had.
So Naomi, can you talk to me a little more about that community? Because that didn't come up in our first conversation, and now I'm very interested, of course. So 10 years, you've seen that evolve over time from the start to where you are now. I guess my question is, what's in it for HR leader? Because it sounds like you're very passionate, clearly, and It sounds like it is a place for other people who are passionate about changing the future of work for the good that they can come to. So I'd love to hear more about it.
Yes. So thank you for asking the question. So my business partner, Mark Edgar, and I designed this community really to solve a question that one of our colleagues asked us, which is, why am I always in the wrong room? Why am I always in a room with HR leaders where either everything is perfect, or they're not being bold enough, or they're complaining that they don't have a seat at the table, or they're not being vulnerable enough to share their failures and what they're learning from it, et cetera, et cetera. So we really felt that there was this need to bring together CHROs and VP and above HR business partner and talent, for that's a very long title, but essentially very senior HR professionals in a safe space where they can really learn from really big progressive thought leaders, as well as from each other, and have a safe space to ask each other the tough questions that they may not be able to ask anybody internally in their organization. So as we all know, HR can be a very lonely place, especially as you get more senior. There's kind of this expectation that you have all the answers, that you're always looking kind of buttoned up and you know how to solve all the very, very complex people challenges. And we simply can't do that alone. We couldn't do it alone 20 years ago, but we certainly cannot do it alone now. So many new problems coming our way. You know, it started out, well, it didn't start. It really had a major uptick during the pandemic where we were expected to be kind of the COVID experts. And now we're expected to be the AI experts and everything in between. So, you know, it seems as though like any new thing that the organization is learning falls on the HR leader's plate. And so navigating these things with a community of people who are willing to share their learnings, their successes, what they're reading about, all that good stuff is really, really important in this day and age.
Okay, Naomi, you shattered my vision of the HR profession because, you know, I thought you guys had all the answers. And now I'm learning.
Now we do with ChatGPT, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got to get my head around that. You
know, that's the issue.
But you did, in your first answer, you said one of the goals was to help HR leaders work better. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a little bit more behind that than just more efficient. What do you mean when you say we want to help people work better?
Yeah. So we used the term supercharge human performance for the first time in our trends report in 2025 at Future Forward. And really this concept, it's so loaded. Like that term is so loaded. And so when we think about all the disparate things that fall into HR's remit these days, it's really figuring out kind of what those levers are and how you can optimize them to have healthy organization, healthy employees, and make it more of both and as opposed to an either or. So one example, which I won't go deep on, but I can go very deep, is flexibility and hybrid working, right? This whole concept that you either have a hybrid working policy or you have productive employees just does not make sense, right? So building more of those win-wins of, if we do these things for our employees, they are healthier, they are better engaged, they are more loyal, they want to deliver more for the organization, and therefore we drive business results. We want to create more of that dialogue, as opposed to the organization has one stance and the employees are, there's an uprising, and we have to reconcile that.
One of the best sayings I heard, and I've shared it a couple of times, was embrace the power of and reject the tyranny of or.
Yeah.
Which I think you just kind of alluded to there. So we do quite often think, well, it's got to be one or the other, but you know, why can't it be both?
Yeah, absolutely. I've tried to eliminate the word but from my vocabulary as much as possible. So I've taken some clues from improv classes that we've done throughout the years to really try to use the and, and really think that most things are not extreme. If we think about, like, from a human-centered perspective, what people actually want at the end of the day, right? So there's this need to or all the time.
Yeah.
But we can create a lot more ands in our organizations.
It's funny you say that because, you know, I can say something to you like, I understand what you're saying and I agree with it, but, which really kind of means I don't really agree with what you're saying. So
right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I agree with you. If we can use the word and a little bit more, it makes the conversations a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we strive for these perfect policies that are going to address all scenarios and all permutations. And that's just not realistic. So, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to leadership. A lot of effort should be going into developing our leaders in a way where they can be the front line to our people in a much more meaningful way, not just efficiency, but effectiveness. And so, you know, I think a lot of these interventions that we, or these strategies and initiatives that we create in HR, they die on the vine if we don't have leaders who are equipped to actually deliver and own the outcomes of those initiatives, right? Too often we have a leader say, fine, I'll do whatever HR is telling me, they deliver the message or the initiative, it doesn't work, and they say, well, it's HR's fault, right? So, like, we need to create a lot more capacity and capability for our leaders to take ownership of those moments with our employees.
Okay. So, I mean, can we dig down into that a little bit? Because that is a little bit of a mindset shift from what leaders are usually focused on.
Yeah.
Driving revenue, growth, all those other things that you just said. Hey, that's not my job. That's somebody else's job. So how do you go about convincing them or telling them that this is going to be positive?
Yeah, well, so I'll challenge that. Is we just released a white paper on the complete leader of today. It was our November white paper that we collaborated on with Vanessa Chalawi from Egon Zehnder. And we did espouse a couple of mindset shifts that have to happen, and I won't go through all of them. But the things that you said leaders are responsible for, those are the what, but the how is really the important part, right? Like, so driving growth, like, how do you actually do that if your people are completely disengaged, disconnected, don't care? Like, you can argue, you can be cynical and say, just throw more money at them, but money only goes so far and companies only have so much money to go around. So again, it's not an either or. It's not a drive revenue or take care of the people. It's take care of the people so that they drive revenue. It's so that they make your job, who's accountable for the results, a lot easier. So, you know, I think about this with my kids all the time, right? Like, I can go and punish them for doing something that they weren't supposed to do. But, like, is that going to encourage them to actually achieve the outcomes that I and they want to achieve, right? So there's got to be a better way of enabling them to get to where they need to go in a way that resonates for them. It's more scalable and more sustainable that way.
As I'm listening to the two of you speak, and, you know, I'm going to go back to where you're talking about, Al, that's a great quote, and the and instead of the but. And it's at that time of the year where I'm planning for 2026, which encompasses everything from personal to how I want to live my life to the person that I want to become. And I'm envisioning but with an X through it and with a green check mark through it. And just the power, imagine just the power if people were listening to this episode and thought, that, yeah, I'm going to try that for next year. It'd be so interesting to see how the rest of that year went, because I think that is power when you position it that way.
Yeah.
And you think, because Al, exactly what you said, hey, that's a great idea, but gets changed completely that, hey, that's a great idea, and.
Yeah.
Or that's just not a great idea.
Right.
Right? I think that's the heart of the matter.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Naomi, so I love your background, and I know you've helped lots of organizations go through some pretty big transformations, right? Like everything from diversity and inclusion work to digital change. From your perspective, how does cultural context shape the way HR leaders think about inclusion, innovation, and keeping employees engaged around the world? Because let's face it, I mean, when I came into the business, I was dealing, you know, with Ontario clients and then Canada and then the US, and now it's on a global scale. And I'm sure you're the same. So I'd love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, I like to approach everything from a human-centered perspective. So I don't know if you're talking culture like world culture, like global culture, or organizational culture, because there's a little bit of nuance both, right?
Yeah, organizational was where I was going with it.
Yeah, so I think like the things you mentioned shape culture, and culture is the outcome of those things that you mentioned, right? How you incent people to be more innovative, how you incent people to be more inclusive, how you develop people on those things, right? There's how do you recruit for that? How do you develop people for that? How do you measure for that? How do you give feedback for that? Those all will form the culture. So if you say we're an inclusive culture, but you hire a bunch of people who do not demonstrate inclusive behavior, you're not going to get that culture, right? Right? Like, so it's important to have that aspiration of what you want your culture to be, but also be very realistic about the people that you have in your organization and whether they are able to deliver that culture or not. Because again, back to my point, leaders are the front line of that culture. And, you know, anything you can think about, like I think about well-being all the time, right? And well-being was before the pandemic, it was like, let's do a yoga class and offer free smoothies and have a steps challenge, right? That was well-being and benefits, obviously, like the standard benefits packages and all that good stuff. But if you think about what people feel in terms of their own well-being on a daily basis, it's really the interactions they have with their leader and the people they work with. That is really at the end of the day, which is culture, right? Like, how do you experience your participation in an organization on a day-to-day basis? And how does that roll up to your perception of what that means, like what words you use to describe that culture? So it's very circular in terms of, and cyclical in terms of, you know, it's important to set goals around what type of culture you want to achieve and why you want to have that culture, right? Like, what's happening in the organization and in the world that makes you think that that culture is appropriate to deliver on your goals and objectives now and in the future? And then, like, how are you shaping the behaviors of leaders so that they deliver that experience to employees on a day-to-day basis? Does that answer your question?
It does. And it actually leads me to another question, because I love going to work. I've loved it for 20 years. We've had the partnership with Al and Joe for 20 years, and we've grown a team. And I think, Naomi, I think it's such a great place to work, but I'm one of the owners, right? And I'd love to hear your perspective of, because I know you work with leadership, you work with HR teams. How should people who are running the company, who own the company, or are the CEO of the company think about, well, of course, I'm going to think this is great, but it might be just a little bit short-sighted in terms of how that employee is experiencing that. Mm-hmm. And I'd appreciate hearing it for myself, and I know other people would too. What are the things that I should maybe think about? Like, oh, well, I love doing this because I have ownership in the company. Maybe other people aren't seeing it the same way. You know what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah. So I have a very simple but difficult to execute answer sometimes, which is ask them and listen. So both of those things, right? Ask them targeted questions that you may not want to hear the answers to, but need to hear the answers to, and then do something about it. So whether it's we are addressing this, or we knew about this and we're not addressing it, very, very simply ask people very often. Now we have incredible tools at our disposal that it doesn't have to be like an annual survey that's complicated and a book that sits on your desk for 3 months before you dig into it. You can do regular pulse checks and be open and vulnerable to feedback, right? Like, we tried this. We're not sure if it resonated. It resonated for us. Not sure if it resonated for you. And what I've heard called a diagonal slice of the organization, right? Like, everyone should have their voice heard. And just the simple act of asking people for their opinion creates an inclusive environment. If they think that their ideas are being heard, that they're not being negatively impacted by sharing, you know, dissenting views, and that you're doing something about it.
So I love that. And you kind of already alluded to this. So I think I know what your answer might be, but I'll ask it anyway. So you get some of that feedback. Like you said, you may not like the answer. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just not something that's, you know, practical.
Yeah.
It can't be executed. Whatever. Hey, listen, I really appreciate your feedback. And I'm going to use the word right now. But
yeah,
you know, it's not something that we can work on right now for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So how would you go about approaching that situation?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you do get one-off comments in any survey that you put out there that are like, okay, this is obviously an outlier. And you don't want to make it a witch hunt for someone who's expressed a dissenting view. But you do want to communicate, I've heard you, and this is why we aren't addressing that right now. Or this is how we think we are addressing it. And that's where often like a committee of employees actually works out sometimes. Like if you put together a council to work on certain things, if they feel they have ownership to solve a problem, mm-hmm. or they see their friends or colleagues solving a problem, it goes a really long way. But you're obviously not going to be able to address every single point of feedback in an engagement survey, which is often why companies don't send it out, because they're like, we don't have capacity to address the feedback that's coming. But grouping it into themes and addressing it at a theme level and really being very clear, this is what we're addressing this year, this is what we are not addressing this year, and here's why, I think goes a really long way, because people then feel like they have a fair answer and that they've been heard, which really goes a very long way.
So maybe a little bit of a follow-up to that, and appreciate what you just said, but maybe a little bit of a follow-up. Do you see one area, can you identify one specific thing where you think organizations are still coming up short or missing the mark when it comes to supporting their people? Is there one theme that you might see out there?
I mean, it really varies from company to company, from leader to leader. Debatable whether you ever want to put compensation on that kind of survey, because I don't think anybody's ever happy with their compensation. But I think some of the areas that, again, like, is that either or thing? I think back to the flexibility example that I gave you. I think people, even if they were to show up in the office every single day, they don't want to be told that they have to and that they're being monitored and badge swiped. So, you know, again, thinking about these things from a human-centered perspective, and like, would you be motivated to do more work or better work if you were treated this way? That's always a good question to ask yourself.
I want to go back to something, Naomi, you said in the beginning of the podcast, and you shattered Al's image of, you know, HR knowing everything, of course, but now you're expected to know everything about AI as well. So I'd love to dive a little bit deeper into the AI topic. And, you know, we're seeing AI automation in transforming traditional HR roles. How can HR leaders preserve the human in human resources while still embracing that technology that is going to help us and make our lives a lot easier down the road, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think exactly what you said. I think embracing technology so we can focus on the more human elements of HR, right? Like, I don't see any HR professional ever saying, oh, I have all this capacity, right? Like, we're constantly fighting fires. We're constantly doing kind of minutia, deep down a rabbit hole work because a leader has asked us a question that we don't have access to the data. And there's just so much of that that's still on HR's plate. So AI provides such an opportunity to liberate us from that and to really focus on what we do best, which is connecting with people, building relationships, critical thinking, helping solve problems from a talent perspective, as opposed to the minutia details that can way better be handled by AI, right? Because AI is actually less likely to make human error than humans are in some of that stuff. So once we have our comfort with AI and leveraging AI, and I always say it's not a set it and forget it. It's not a let AI handle it and us take what it says at face value, but it gets us out of at least the initial steps of that minutia data gathering that we always had to do in the past. And it can be a very helpful sounding board. Again, HR is a lonely place. AI can be a very helpful sounding board when you're trying to test new ideas, when you're trying to ask for some advice in terms of how to approach a situation. It's very, very powerful in lots of different ways. And my prediction for 2026 is it's going to be a lot more integrated in everything we do, as opposed to let's go offline and use ChatGPT over here and then do our job over here. So it's really exciting what AI has to offer our profession, our organizations at large, but especially the HR profession.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And we've leaned into technology and AI, and we just really feel it will enhance what we're able to do. And Naomi, after we finish recording, I'll show you something I did. My wife, where I'm in Zagreb this summer in Croatia on vacation, And that's another topic, shouldn't be working on vacation, but I find this really fun to do. And every time she comes out of a store, I'm talking to my phone. She goes, what on earth are you doing? And I had built out a tool, which I'll share with you after, that has become really useful to a lot of my clients. And that was all, I couldn't have done that, or that would have taken me so much more time, but I had someone or something to brainstorm with and work through some iterations. And then of course I had to go away and build that. So
yeah,
I'm really excited about the future. I know some people, it does scare them. If it does, please don't watch the new Terminator that's out on Netflix now, because that might get you thinking that maybe in the wrong direction. But we've arrived at the part of the podcast that is my absolute favorite part. It's Al has more.
Hold on.
Oh, please, Al.
Hold on.
I'm jumping
before
ahead.
Before we get there,
please.
I did want to circle back to something very, very early in
circle,
in
the my friend.
Here.
You circle. Yes.
And in the bio that you read for Naomi, one of the things that you said was Naomi enjoys exploring Toronto. And I would love to hear, because sometimes, you know, it's great to talk about work and great to talk about the profession, but sometimes it's great to talk about the person. So when we talk about exploring Toronto, what does that mean?
It's a great question. I still say I'm new here, but I'm really not. I've been living here for 15 years. But I really enjoy finding new restaurants, finding new little boutiques, finding new little neighborhoods. I mean, new neighborhoods for me pop up all the time. My husband loves to take a really big bike ride over past the beaches. We live in Midtown, so past the beaches. And for those of you who are not from Toronto, don't worry about this. But like, we ended up at a beach where there were people having barbecues. And those of you who are from Toronto are probably like rolling your eyes. How did it take you so long to discover this? But it's just really fascinating how you could go, you know, it's not like New York, which is where I lived, but similar to New York, you go just a few blocks and you find yourself in a completely different neighborhood. And I really love that. But especially through food, I love to explore new cities.
Well, I think that's great, because I think quite often living in and around Toronto, you forget what a great city it is. And, you know, I think it's just kind of natural for everyone to want to explore elsewhere, but then forget to kind of look in your own backyard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wanted to kind of dive down into that because, yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting comment. So yes, let's get back to where we were headed with that. And this is the question we always love to hear from the guests at the end. And the saying is, a society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So we'd love to hear about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting, either through your work at your company or inside the community or whatever you think is important.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go back to the mission of Future Forward, and also I think my own personal purpose, which is making work better. And I think we have a tremendous opportunity to do that through the HR function. I think we have a tremendous opportunity in front of us. And so I challenge us all to really take a human-centered approach to the problems we're solving, leverage technology in order to help us focus on the humans more. And I hope the next generation of HR leaders are inspired to do that. Because I know when I first started in HR, that wasn't necessarily the approach and the reason I didn't want to necessarily get into HR as a profession. It felt a lot more gatekeeping, policy-driven, that kind of thing. And I think we have just a tremendous opportunity to make work better and to supercharge human performance. And I hope, again, that the next generation of HR leaders uses a more human-centered approach, dreams bigger, thinks bigger, asks the good questions about why we do things the way they do. And that's what we hope to inspire in our community and through the work that we do.
Well, that is a fantastic answer. I appreciate you not only sharing that, but sharing all your great ideas today, because this was a great conversation. And I think probably I can speak for Robin as well that we learned a lot today.
Great, that HR doesn't really have all the answers, but now we do with ChatGPT.
Now you do, exactly. Or at least you have it very quickly. Give me a sec, let me write. This has been fantastic. My next call is going to be out to Margot, our mutual friend, and say thank you again for such a great introduction. Margot is just salt of the earth, wonderful person. I'm not surprised she knows someone like you, who I feel the same way about. I'm sure this is not our last conversation, Naomi. We'll continue. And I'd actually love to get together and explore some of Toronto. Maybe we can find something new together. For listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing with your company, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Thanks for asking. You can follow me or connect with me and say hi on LinkedIn. I'm quite active on LinkedIn, as well as our website, futureforward.com, is where you can download all our latest white papers, get information about our free free events, our membership. So those are the two places to find me.
Perfect. Well, that does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for us, please feel free to give us a call or join the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here today very clearly. Success leaves clues. See you next time.